to the latest episode of the Trinity Tims podcast, right? Come on, guys, try and be professional here. act as if you're on Sports Scene. Pretend you're Neil McCann, right? We're recording this at quarter to six, and on my telly in the background, Alan Hutton's almost in tears. The guy called Cam Davidson is quite a good football manager. He's won more cups than Steven Gerrard, but anyway, professional heads. So we had a nice agenda all laid out. We're going to discuss lots of things in depth and detail, but alas, it's almost the problems of live television are almost live podcasting. So the boring humdrum Scottish Cup was just falling completely into place. Hibs won away on Friday night. On Saturday, it was all routine, boring home wins. This afternoon, Aberdeen won 3-0, and then there was a Glasgow derby. Scotland's newest club against Scotland's oldest club, and the oldest club, with the benefit of 150 years' experience, to be fair, they came out on top. Boo! Boo! Come on, get them! 1-0. Adam Montgomery came on and played. Congratulations, Adam. Willie Hawkey would be in the stand and various others. Malky Mackay Sr., I dare say, would be there as well, and he'd have a little chuckle. He's got a good history with the Scottish Cup. So Queen's Park won 1-0, and it was ridiculous. I never saw the goal. I switched over to watch 7, 8, 9 minutes of stoppage time from the Liverpool game. I missed a VAR check at Ibrox, and the VAR check went against them. And when I switched back, I could see there was a line in the top corner of my screen. And I thought it might have been the graphics, but I looked really close and it said 0-1. And time just ticked away. A few Queen's Park players went down with cramp. And in the last couple of minutes, and then into stoppage time, there was some absolute heroics from the Queen's Park goalkeeper, Callum Ferry. What a lad. He said, not much. He's had a reasonable career. He's English. He's speaking away on Premier Sports after it. Been at Queen's Park a good few years. The last two games, Queen's Park lost to Airdrie and to Morton. So they're not in the best of form. They've lost Dane Murray. Dane Murray was involved with them when they beat Thistle in their first Scottish Cup tie this season. I think it was on penalties. Dane Murray was playing. Then they get past Montrose, and now they're into the quarterfinal. So fingers crossed that Celtic are going to Hampden 3 times this season in the Scottish Cup. Be great to be going there in a couple of weeks' time and clapping Queen's Park onto the pitch in the quarterfinal, and then hopefully can win that. And then we're 2 steps away from retaining the Scottish Cup. So it's been a funny old day. It's been a funny couple of hours. There's a lot of hilarity to cover. So, Eric, talk me through your Sunday afternoon experience.
Well, my Sunday afternoon experience. I went from being fairly flicking around the channels and not expecting much from the game at Ibrox. And I was messaging James before, and then James messaged me to say that Liverpool were 1 down. And Conor Hazard was playing a blinder, so I was watching the game at Ibrox, so I flicked over to the Liverpool game and caught the last 8-9 minutes of injury time in that one as well. And like you, Joe, I missed the goal because James just messaged and said Queen's Park are after going 1-up, and I was there, what the hell? So I went back to that, and I mean, what can you say? That guy, Callum Ferry, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I mean, he pulled off some serious saves towards the end, you know, he really did. He pulled all the stops out. And I said to James there before we came live, I said, when the penalty was called, which to be fair was not a penalty. Let's call a spade, that was not a penalty. But anyway, you know, I think the fact that it ended up being a penalty and they missed it, that it was saved by Callum Ferry made it all the better. It made it all made it all the sweeter. But to be fair, I mean, the keeper was just like even that corner towards the end, the save that he made there, that was out of this world as well. I mean, he was just played out of his skin. And what about Adam Montgomery's head? You know, he took a fair belt from that shot, but he kept it. And that was definitely goal bound. So, you know, fair play to him for blocking that one. But I mean, that's made my day. Absolutely made my day. I mean, they've gone to you know, a position now where they had their only chance of silverware they have is the Europa League final, and if they can make the Europa League final. So, and I mean, chances of that happening are somewhere between Bob Hope and no hope, I'd say. So, I mean, if they can't beat Queen's Park, who are they? Like, I mean, when they come against serious competition in the Europa League, well, somebody's going to annihilate them in the Europa League, I reckon. But yeah, that's, I mean, what can I say? I'm absolutely over the moon. It's made my day. It's made my day. And like, as I said to James there, you know, they were singing God Save the King at the end. Might save the king, he didn't save them. You know, and the famine song wasn't much good to them either, was it? So yeah, no, I mean, absolutely over the moon. It's just made my day.
Special shout out for Captain Disappointed, James Tavernier. Stepped up in stoppage time. The man with the armband, just after we singing God Save the King, right in front of the Union Bears. And what did he do? He bottled it. He did a Ridvan Yilmaz. He couldn't deliver from the penalty spot. It was a good save, but it was a savable penalty. So, well done. Take absolutely nothing away from Callum Ferry. He's got legendary status for the rest of his life. Anytime he's in Santa Ponsa, he'll be guaranteed a few pints.
100%.
Tav stepped up, and Tav did Tav things. He bottled it. So, let's hope Tav's on post-match media duties. Jack Butler normally steps in.
Joe, can I give a quick shout out to Liam? Because Liam gave Tavernier a lambasting at Manchester when they were playing Manchester United at Old Trafford. Remember, I sent you the footage of that. It must have had an effect on him because he missed that penalty this evening.
Yep. So hopefully Tav or somebody will be on media duties. But we must say, Ibrox podcasts are in for one hell of a spike over the next 24
yes.
So if you've got a Sevco podcast, get your stuff out morning, noon and night. You can't fail. You've got a massive audience. We've been quiet for a couple of weeks. We know it's always coming. It's never more than a few weeks away. We probably thought it was coming at Hearts next Saturday, but nope, it's today, it's now, it's live. So anyone with an Ibrox podcast, there'll be some belters coming out. Heart and Hand should be spectacular. They'll all be good. They'll all be vying for each other, but they've got a massive market over the next couple of days. But we've kept them quiet so far. I dare say James had a good chuckle. I meant to do these introductions and things. I'm Joe McHugh from Video Cell.
Eric, you forgot yourself, Joe.
James from the Celtic blog. We are a fairly new podcast. If you like our stuff, please subscribe, like, share, all that sort of stuff. But who really cares about that when Queen's Park have put them out of the cup? Their season is as good as ended. They'll try their best to sell the Europa League, but domestically, they've got 3 months of friendlies to play. But let's not forget, for the Sunday papers only, Phil Clement was asked about the priority of the Scottish Cup this season, since the league was looking a little bit doubtful. But bold Phil, no surrender, possibly one of his last ever media podcasts. Don't be silly. The league's still to be played for. It's only 13 points. We'll keep on fighting to the death, but it's mathematically impossible. All that guff. But I've kept him waiting. Over to you, James. Fire away.
Well, Joe's right. We are a relatively new podcast, and amidst all the comments in there that we've had in the last few months about having faces for radio, which none of us would deny, there have been a lot of comments about the lack of smiling. I don't think that's a problem tonight. I don't think anyone's going to have a problem with a lack of smiling tonight. I think that the day started pretty good. I think the writing was on the wall for them when Niko Katic got named in the Plymouth team playing Liverpool today and had an absolute belter of a game, was named man of the match by the ITV commentary team. And there was a lot of talk about him going to Ibrox, of course, during the transfer window when he was available for free, and they just couldn't get it done, whether it was money, whether it was anything else. But he's kept out. Liverpool today and their teams went through, and they were utter shambles today from start to finish at Ibrox, an utter shambles. It was a vintage Clement performance, I think we can call it. Every one of the serial failures failed again. That's what serial failures do. It's what you expect from them. Barami got brought off at halftime. I don't know how much money they spent on him. 2 million, or is it 3 million?
Three and a half.
He ain't worth it. it certainly ain't worth it. It ain't worth it, any of it, because that's him being hooked again after 45 minutes. And I saw nothing from any of their so-called big players today. Eggerman had, I think, had 2 weeks of good football and scoring goals, and they were talking about him being a 25, 30 million pound player. Didn't look like that today. Dessers had a one-on-one with the goalkeeper at the end and bottled it. Taverniers stepped up and missed the penalty that would have given them an undeserved lifeline. It's a car crash. It's a disaster on all fronts. And how Clermont survives this, I do not know. I do not know. There comes a time when it becomes more expensive or harder to keep a failing manager than it does to just bite the bullet and pay the price and sack the guy. And I think that moment's been reached. I don't believe for a second that he can survive that. Their season is over. And I think that their whole function as a club now is about trying to save next season and stop it from being an utter, utter, utter wipeout. And I don't fancy their chances, to be frank, because they're in a huge financial hole as it is. And sacking this guy is not going to be cheap. And the idea that he'll do walking away, I think that's for the birds. He's already said that won't happen. And I don't believe it will.
Do you know what? I'd be interested in the post-match interview, actually, with him and the excuses. The excuses are going to be good this time around.
If you can't afford the fee for Lyle Cameron from Dundee, it's highly unlikely that you'll be able to pay off your manager. So it's all down to the fine detail. Let's hope when Clermont agreed his new contract that if the worst comes to worst and they wish to sack him, he gets paid up front, or he at least gets paid in full. When he renegotiated that contract, you'd imagine he had most of the cards. If he walked away, the whole thing collapsed. So if he's not got a watertight contract, his agent's been playing at games with him. So there's trouble on that front. But they kidded themselves on about Fortress Ibrox. We contributed a good bit to that on the 2nd of January, unfortunately. But the myth of Fortress... I mean, most of the early part of the season, there was loads of one-goal wins and they were getting booed off the park at half. They're still on it. Emma Dodds is looking too happy. They get booed off at half-time and full-time, match after match, and you were getting told, "Don't what? Oh, there's Phil, he's on, but we'll need to leave that till later." He's looking a bit pale. But they were kidded on that there's an exciting young team. They were told, wait to October, wait to November. Well, we're into February now, and the exciting young team is in pieces. I mean, it can't be overlooked. The Queen's Park goal was absolutely fantastic. It was brilliant.
Very well taken.
Incredible composure for the guy in the box. The corner came in, it fell his way. He's confronted by Chelsea prospect Jeffrey, and he treated them as if he was some diddy. He was playing in Cyprus last season, turned them, and then shot across Liam Kelly. And I hope Liam Kelly's family were at the match today. They've been behind him throughout his career. It must have been a proud moment for the Kelly family and for Kellys everywhere to watch that ball flying past Liam into the back of the net. There was nothing to save Liam Kelly. Liam Kelly, you enjoyed beating Celtic 3-0. You're in there with the best of them. You're in with the team that lost to Queen's Park. It's not an isolated incident. What I reckon, 11 years ago, Albion Rovers were robbed of a victory at Ibrox thanks to John Beaton. 10 years ago, Raith Rovers won at Ibrox. And since 2012, we've had Forfar, Queen of the South, Alloa umpteen times, Raith Rovers twice, winning cup ties against Scotland's newest club. So it really should bring a little bit of reality. But as we know, reality is not, it's not done at Ibrox.
It's a rare commodity.
The best that. It's a heavy jersey to be able to be getting all that nonsense. And there's a culture of winning, blah, blah, blah. Three trophies in 11 years. Callum Davidson's got two trophies in his career. So
let's talk for a minute about Callum Davidson, right? Because Callum Davidson deserves a lot of credit for what he's done tonight, an incredible amount of credit. And Callum Davidson, and I remember when Rodgers won his second treble. First manager in Scottish football history to win back-to-back trebles. First ever. Didn't get the Manager of the Year award. Because Rodgers has only done what you expected of him after an invincible season. So although it made history, no one else had ever done it. He didn't get Manager of the Year. We were told that sometimes you need to overlook the guy at the top club and you need to look at what other people have done further down the line. Well, you won't get better than a non-Glasgow manager winning a cup double. You won't get better than that. Did he win Manager of the Year that year? Did he box? I hope he gets it this year. I'll be overdue. Scandalous that he wasn't the Manager of the Year that time. Scandalous.
Absolutely. That seemed to have pressed a nerve there, Carl Davidson. I know a good friend and someone with a fair bit to do with Callum's career, Tommy Campbell, former St Johnstone Montrose, Arbroath manager. Tommy Campbell is one of life's great guys. He's a fanatical Celtic supporter, but he's worked his way around the clubs. Great guy, fantastic enthusiast. I don't think he's in the best of health just now, but I'm sure he'll be chuffed for Callum Davidson, who's also a mean golfer and a mean tennis player. But there's all sorts to come out of Ibrox in the back of that. So there is no salvaging it. The media conference will be a classic. Somebody will try and ask what positives can be drawn from it. And all sorts, they'll be doing all sorts of gymnastics to try and claw something from it. But they saw it. It's a performance they've seen many times. Generally, they've won 1-0. They get by against St Mirren early in the season. Hibs missed a penalty at Ibrox, etc., etc. There's been all sorts of freaky stuff to keep them on and get a home run going, but they're in a hell of a mess. Financially, the semi-finals of the Cup and the final of the Cup do bring in good money. Not particularly as prize money, but as gate money. So they're gone, and any vestige of salvaging some from the season and how they dress up the season ticket renewal campaign, it's going to be an absolute classic. So, Eric, you've had maybe, I think it's about an hour or so since the final whistle went. Any other thoughts? I'm sure there's plenty of thoughts coming to mind, but as James said, our Norwegian specialist body language mentioned smiles. Well, it'll be a hell of a job wiping the smiles off our faces tonight, tomorrow, and through the rest of the... Well, we'll see how it goes on Wednesday night when we get round to Bayern Munich, but up until then, we'll all be living in a bubble. So, any more thoughts jump into your mind, Eric, from tonight's clarity?
To be honest with you, I mean, I felt watching from... You know, I was on and off watching the game, but what I did feel was that, you know, Queen's Park didn't come to park the bus. They actually played. You know, and I mean, look, towards the end, they were under the caution. They were, you know, they struggled to play it out of the box. But throughout the game itself, they actually took the game to the Ibrox side. They played well in the first half, hanging on a bit at the end of the first half. But I mean, I think they did themselves proud. I think tactically, Callum Davidson set them up perfectly. You know, they really seemed to have their tactics spot on. And I echo what James says. Absolutely, he 100% deserved to be Manager of the Year in 2021. Winning, I mean, when you consider, you know, at that time, the resources he had at St. Johnstone, he had literally a fraction of the resources that they had at Ibrox. And the fact that, I mean, because we were a non-entity that season, it was like the Ibrox side should have wrapped up a treble, no problem. They should. Right. I mean, Stephen Gerrard, his biggest failure as the Ibrox manager was that he didn't get a treble in that season because he didn't have any competition from us, you know. So the fact that a guy with a fraction of the resources that Stephen Gerrard had at his disposal and a Celtic side that was non-existent that season did not get Manager of the Year, that was an absolute travesty. And I bet you he feels somewhat vindicated today and doing what he did today. I mean, that is a small measure of revenge for him, I guess. You know, that because he certainly, I would imagine at that time, felt that he should have got that award and that hands down it was his, you know, because there is just no comparison. There was no comparison to what Stephen Gerrard did. No comparison. So, but yeah, I mean, look, what can you say? It's as the title of the pod is, they're simply depressed today. That's for sure. And, you know, the fact that we are sitting here on the 9th of February and their season is over.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you would have to say at this point in time that Philippe Clement is going down as the worst Ibrox manager of all time, you know, because I don't ever do you guys recall them being out of every competition at that point of the season, building it by the 9th of February.
But bad managers have all had the bump. He said the bump a while ago, so he's been allowed to continue longer than most. So Kachina get chased, and Van Bronckhorst and Beal. Van Bronckhorst lasted 366 days, 10 months for Beal. So Clement's had longer than anyone. Yeah. He had a full week of training today. After all that, this week, after all that hectic schedule, all those horrible midweek games, the lads were out grass at Murray Park, working on their set pieces, all different drills, and that was what they turned up with today. I'm remembering Callum Ferry did make a mistake. After 5 minutes, the ball, side of his goal, he made a bad pass out of defence. It fell to Diomande, and he'd an open goal for about 20 yards, managed to put it past the post, and perhaps that was the first sign that things were going Queen's Park's way. So Callum Ferry, look at a 9.5 out of 10 today. It's not a 10.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing as well that I, as I said earlier on, you know, I couldn't believe it when the ref blew for the penalty, and like there was no way that was a penalty. But I think karma won out in the end, because that was justice was served. And even the fact that they were re-looking the penalty, and there was hint of the ref looking to do a retake on it, because he reckoned that Ferry was off his line, which he wasn't. He actually timed his movement to perfection. But you know, it just seems that this kind of luck that they used to have before from the officials it's gone. You know, they've spent it. They haven't got any left, and it seems to me that every avenue they're going down now, they're spending everything. So, and what I mean by that is, if you look at the management, which you touched on there, Joe, if you look at Kachina, you know, the way he never lasted, but even coming forward to the way that, you know, Van Bronckhorst was treated after bringing them to a Europa League final, and the way he was shafted with Beal being brought in, they've, like, the goodwill, I don't even know if you could call it goodwill, but the sort of, the way that they've treated managers over the years has well and truly bitten them in the ass, and they're at a point where they can't do anything. They've spent every opportunity they have with management, and they've got to the point now where, because they've paid off so many managers in the last few years early out of their contracts, that the simple fact is, as you alluded to earlier on, they couldn't even bring in that young kid from Dundee, Lyle Cameron, you know, and because they didn't have the money to. And so the fact of the matter is, like, that they've got to a point where this cycle of regurgitating manager or kicking managers out and you know, basically bringing in another manager mid-season, they knew it had to stop. But, you know, it's had to stop at a dead duck, you know, in Philippe Clement. And he's obviously he's going to go down as one of the worst. And the only thing he's got left to save his career now is how far he goes in the Europa League. And look, I mean, if they come up against a top-class side in the Europa League, they'll be absolutely pulverized. You know, I don't rate their chances at all. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to conduct myself here to what I want to say, because there's so many things going around inside my head, because it's just, I mean, I expected, look, like anybody else, I expected they, you know, Queen's Park to get tanking, you know, especially, you know, based on the results they got in their previous games, you know, they hadn't been in massive form either. So, yeah, it's just, what can you say? It's just, it's luscious.
James, we've been getting told in recent weeks, recent months, that they're in transition. What state would you say the transition is just now?
Well, they're transitioning right now between one manager and the next manager. That's the transition they're going to go through. And I've already had a wee peek on the forums to see what they're saying. And tonight it's all sack him right now and go and get Gerrard. Two things about that. First,
oh, please do.
Come on! Go and get Gerrard. Right, because that would be tremendous, right? Secondly, Gerrard won't go there in 100 years. With no money to spend, he's not going to go there in 100 years. They have nothing to offer Gerrard at this point. Back when Gerrard took the job the first time, King offered them a pot of cash. We'll find the cash somewhere. You can just spend what you need to. And this time, the coffers are empty. There is nothing left. As I said in a piece, earlier in the week, Celtic have got about 15 accountants counting the money, and they've got a guy whose job it is to go down the back of the sofas and the lounges after every game for spare change. That's the state they're in. He's not going back there in a million years, even if they were to make the offer, because he doesn't want to get humiliated and embarrassed, and he knows that's what would be waiting for him. I don't know where they go from here, but that's the only transition that's happening. They're transitioning from one management team to the next right now, because there's no way this guy can survive this. It's impossible to imagine it. The fans have made their minds up. They're not going to buy season tickets if this guy's still a manager next season. There's no way. And this is only the start of the meltdown. I said a couple of weeks ago, and I wrote again today, that we'll finish with a higher margin in the league than we have right now, because the second half of their season has been heading for a collapse. They didn't strengthen in the January window. They're a weaker team than they were, and they were pretty bad then. I watched them the night of the against the Belgians. Their players were dropping like flies all over the pitch long before that game ended. And they don't have the legs, they don't have the energy, they don't have the will to see this season out properly. So the gap's going to be even bigger. And try to convince fans to buy season tickets on the back of another year of Philip Clement, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So they're in an existential kind of risk place right now. If they keep this guy in charge, they can forget it. If they sack him, it's going to cost them a lot of money, and that's money that the new manager's not going to get to spend.
Yeah. And another thing as well that's very noticeable of late is Iga Mann's Rich Vein of form has dried up as well.
Yeah.
You know, their 25 million quid striker isn't scoring anymore. And he looked way off the boil today. Absolutely way off the boil today. So, you know, he was their major asset. So that asset has fallen by the wayside now. So, yeah, it's
the Chelsea scouts probably left at half time with Barami.
Yeah.
Chumped him at the airport.
Right, we'll call a halt for now on the hilarity from Ibrox. Aye. We'll do a 5 minutes at the end. That's 27 minutes of laughter. Yeah,
Phil could have been sacked before by the time you get to the end.
Let's see what happens.
Yep. 28 minutes of hilarity. We've been accused of being that Reverend I Am Jolly a few times, so that's been kicked into touch. Anyone accusing us of I Am Jolly in future, we can point them towards this episode. So we'll turn towards matters Celtic. And firstly, we'll just stick to the football matters, things that go on the pitch, goals, crosses, shots, tackles, all that sort of stuff around politics and transfer. So it's been all about Daizen Maeda. He's always been, he's most certainly a unique talent, but over the last month or so, and particularly the last couple of games, the three games, the header at Motherwell and two assists, and then the two contrasting goals against Dundee in midweek, and then a hat-trick. So he's got a League Cup hat-trick and a Scottish Cup hat-trick. He's got 13 games left to find an SPFL hat-trick, but he has been a force of nature. He was sort of written off a little bit Didi Agat style in that because he's got these great qualities, but he's got a couple of flaws. And because of those flaws, he's at Celtic. He's erratic. He can put it in rose ed as easily as he puts it in the net. But the last month or so has shown incredible composure. When he gets a chance, there's no rushing it. Three chances out of three yesterday, all three of them buried. And that's pretty much been the pattern of recent times. Aberdeen in the League Cup semi-final got a taste of it when he scored a hat-trick at Hampden. So Maeda has found some absolutely special form. I can see you shaking your head, James, at the suggestions of comparisons with Agat. Agat was a flying machine without a final cross. Maeda has got incredible energy, but his finishing up until recently has been a bit hit or miss. The miss bit's been put into touch. He's putting almost everything back. It's an absolute tragedy he's not playing on Wednesday, but putting that to one side, tell me why you're shaking your head about the Agat comparison and give us your thoughts on Daizen Maeda over the last couple of weeks and overall.
I used to tell my mate, Johnny, all the time that Georgios Samaras was a fantastic football player and that he just didn't suit our style of play. And he used to think I was absolutely off my nut because I was a Samaras super fan when nobody else was. And I remember the year we won 2-0 at Ibrox, and he was immense that day and scored both the goals and was the big hero. And at the end of the game, my mate said to me, "You might be right about Samaras after all." And I don't really care if I look back. I think that turned him around in the eyes of a lot of Celtic fans. I felt the same way about Maeda for ages. I don't know why so many of our fans were on the guy's case. I don't know what player they thought they were watching, but it wasn't the player I was watching. I think he's been one of the most effective Celtic signings that I think I have seen in eons. He's probably my favourite Celtic player to watch since Larsson, because he just has every quality you could hope for in a player. The work rate of the guy is second to none. His pace is ridiculous. I remember Ange talking about that. And Ange saying that it's not just his pace rate and his acceleration, which are both key components to his game. He says, but with a lot of players, when they do that burst of speed and they hit that peak, it takes them a while in the game before they can get back to doing that. He says, but Maeda can just do it again and then again and then again. It's like a fucking Duracell bunny. Just wind him up and let him go. And then at the end, you just wind him up and let him go again. And I did not understand why the critics didn't like him, and I did not understand why they thought he was a weak link in the team. Since Rodgers has came in, Rodgers has honed the talents that he's got and made him into a worldly inside forward. And that's where the goals have came for this season and the assists. Can Maeda play through the middle? Everybody knows Maeda can play through the middle. Maeda was the top scorer on the J-League the season we signed him. And he'd finished ahead of Kyogo on almost every season he played in the J-League. So we know he can play as a striker. But Rodgers turned him into an absolute world-class inside forward. And as loath as I am to see him playing as a striker, I never doubted that he could. I don't know if we're watching actually a better finisher than Kyogo. I don't know if we're watching a player who scored more goals as a central striker than Kyogo would. I still think we'll lose something if he's not playing wide. But I love the guy. I've loved the guy for since we signed him. And you talk about composure. I mean, it's not just this season. I remember the goal he scored at Ibrox. And what, the second minute of the game after captain disappointments, glaring mistake, he was on it like that. And I never had the slightest doubt that the ball was going in the net. Never had the slightest doubt. As soon as it got past Tavernier, I thought, this is a goal. That's the way it's a goal. And I think his composers let him down once or twice, but there is an ice-cool finisher in there. But always was. And it's great to see him getting the credit for the fans. Finally, it's great. He's got a song now, which is well overdue. And I absolutely love it. And it's brilliant. No, he's just going to get better and better and better. And our biggest problem is that all the clubs that had overlooked him are not going to be overlooking him any longer. And we are in the fight of our lives to keep him here this summer. And I think we have to, because he's, other than Callum, he is the indispensable player on the Celtic team. And I say that over Carter Vickers and everybody else. He is the one guy we cannot afford to sell, because he will not be replaceable. Not on the kind of budget that we have.
Well, James, I don't think he's had critics. Folk have just said that his finishing has been lacking.
Oh, he has critics, mate. He has critics.
Right, right.
I know a few of them.
In 2.5 seasons at Celtic, what, he came in the 21-22 season, halfway through that, one full season under Ange, one full season under Brendan Rodgers, and my basic arithmetic is 29 goals in 2.5 seasons. We're about two-thirds of the way through this season, and he's on 21 goals. So his
all
finishing,
the manager for
his
that,
finishing has improved greatly this season. But we won't fall out over that. We'll pass to Eric for
triumph of world-class coaching. And the people who don't get what it is that Rodgers does every day only have to look at the difference in this guy and the difference in somebody like Nicholas Kuhn. There is what 2 million or 3 million or whatever Rodgers is paid a year buys you. That's the answer to that query. Because Ange, who knew the guy as well as any player, never got those levels of performance out of him. Never.
Eric, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would recall or go back to our episode where we did, you know, joyful and triumphant after we'd won the League Cup final. And I stated in that podcast that I felt for the performance that Maeda had in that game, he had elevated himself to legendary status because of the way he played and how cool he was. And I firmly believe that that was kind of a turning point in that he has just been, obviously you had the performance against Aberdeen before that and the hat-trick and that in the semi-final, but he's just been imperious since then. He has, it's like he went up another level entirely. And the biggest, the single most factor that you can see in his performance is his finishing, which was totally encapsulated in the game against Dundee the other night there with that beautiful finish that, you know, from that excellent break that Celtic did and, you know, came down the park and he just lobbed the keeper the way he did. It was almost Larson-esque. It was the kind of finish you see from Henrik Larsson. And I, like James, from day one, admired him because I admired him because of his work rate. And even under Ange, that's something that you could never have flawed him for. I mean, he was his energy, his pace, his work rate. The guy was always on the go. He was always tracking back. I mean, we all remember how much he tormented Tavernier in the games that he played against him, even under Ange. So, like, I had always said, when I had spoken to my mates and I had spoken to other people just like James about him, and he had, even in my sports club, he had his critics, you know, but I would always say, you cannot flaw the guy's work rate. If he can just hone his skills a little bit more and improve his finishing, which is exactly what he's done. He's improved his finishing massively, and that's under the tutelage of Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers has brought that out of him, and that is the kind of exactly what James said. That's the kind of coach that Brendan Rodgers is, you know, and he brings that level of performance out of players. He took Matt O'Reilly to another level as well before O'Reilly was sold to Brighton, you know, and he only had one season to work with him. But I mean, you could see the absolute improvement in the level of performance from Matt O'Reilly when he was under Brendan Rodgers. And O'Reilly hit it off with him from day one, because you remember the interview after the Ross County game, the opening game of the season, and the way O'Reilly spoke very highly of Brendan Rodgers and just the training he had done with him up to that point. So this is the worry now, that, you know, we're going to see possibly 30 plus goals. We're going to see the level of goals that Kyogo scored in his pump in the season where he scored 30, 35, 36, was it, you know, under Ange. So this is the worry now, because we get a big offer for this guy in a heartbeat. We know the guy, we know if the bean counters are going to sell him. And we cannot, we've all, like, dare I say it, maybe to a degree, Maeda was living a little bit in Kyogo's shadow while Kyogo was there. And now that Kyogo is gone, the shackles are off. You know, the shackles are off, and he's kind of saying, now is my time to shine. And by God, has he shown it in the last few games that it's his time to shine. You know, but my worry is now that he's in the shop window. He's put himself in the shop window, and the bean counters love when our players go into the shop window, because they'll just go cha-ching and they'll just start, you know, rolling up the price. And it's like I said in one of my articles during the week there, you know, we'll lowball and lowball and lowball for other players, you know, when we're trying to bring players in, and we'll take the piss and we'll come in with crap lowball offers. But we'll always stand our ground when it comes to selling our players, and we'll always get the maximum that we want to sell our players. So sometimes maybe we should show a bit of respect to other clubs, you know, when we're coming in. I mean, I spoke about the Kvistgaard offer, you know, on the final day of the season where, you know, Celtic, the rumour going around that Celtic came in with 10.5 million euros, which is 8.75 million pounds, against the 15 million euros that Brøndby wanted. And, you know, they were offering a 15% sell-on, and Brøndby were offering, you know, wanted 33% sell-on. I mean, if you look at that from in pounds, it was nearly 4 million quid less than what Brøndby were valuing the guy at. And the fact that they couldn't have even met the club somewhere in between that, and, you know, even the Strelitz story where they wouldn't meet the asking price for Strelitz. So the worry is there with Maeda that they're going to – he could end up being another 25 million quid player. He's 27. So, I mean, and this is the thing, Dale, the magic number, 25 million, you know, if that comes along, we're going to be hard pressed to keep him. And that also could be something that seriously pisses off Brendan Rodgers if they sell Maeda, you know. And that's, I kind of had said that I was, you know, we sit back now and we wait for the summer transfer window. I'm actually now already, because the way the performances are with Maeda, I'm actually worrying now about the summer window, that this is just going to be a window where we went into it knowing Matt O'Reilly was going to be sold, and now we're going to go into it thinking, what's going to happen with Maeda? So that's the unfortunate reality of what happens at our club when we have a coach like Brendan Rodgers, who is an elite manager, and he brings the best out of players, and he's just doing that with Maeda. And I think the best is yet to come from Maeda in this season. You're going to see...
Definitely.
You know, that league hat trick, you're going to see that. And the guy is like, he's bagging hat tricks on a regular rate. Like, so all he needs is that league one. And I mean, he was very close to it against Dundee. So it's only a matter of time before he gets that league hat trick, I think, before the season is out. It is definitely coming. So yeah, it's a tough one in that worry is there now that he's going to be in the shop window.
Well, we saw James taking a text message. I presume it wasn't about a Belgian manager getting sacked. So.
No, I'd hope that's what it was, but no. Apparently, he slammed the performance as absolutely unacceptable.
Let's hope he's
the soldier on for the moment. So
let's get a few more days out of him at least, and then at some point the fan media lads will just go too far, and those in charge will realise they better give him. They better feed the fan media sites their victim. It's not good enough getting beat by a club founded in 1867. So Eric was venturing there towards transfer activity. We'll keep that for a slightly later section on this podcast. Wednesday night, Bayern Munich, Celtic against Bayern Munich. I'm going to fire this one at James first, but I think we're in good shape, but we could be in better shape. We could having another striker, whether that was Kyogo or Ian Other. So there's some concerns in defence. Three times since the middle of December, we've lost three goals. Hopefully, we get our defending head on. We were pretty. I'm forgetting the four goals that we lost at Aston Villa. So that was three at Ibrox, three at Hampden, three at Dens Park, and four at Villa Park. So at least they were all away from home. But those are concerning signs. I think we can do quite well against Bayern Munich, but there's going to come a point, 60, 70 minutes. Jota will not last 70 minutes. Jota will have to come off. I don't know how long Nicholas Kuhn and Adam Ida can go, but I suspect we could finish the match. Absolutely no disrespect to Johnny Kenny. It's a hell of a task he's getting thrown at. I've seen Kelly and Sheridan, I've seen Ben Hutchison, and we've all seen Tony Watt come on in Champions League ties to varying degrees of success. Well done, Tony. It's a while ago now, but won't be forgotten. So we're going to have Yang and Kenny on the park in 60, 70 minutes. Yeah, I've not checked the Bayern Munich squad. I suspect they'll have guys that are seasoned pros, guys that come on and turn matches and force defenders into mistakes. So it's going to require a hell of a task. The fixturing hasn't been very kind to us, playing Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. If it was Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, those extra days might have given us a little bit more time. We will have Maeda back for the second leg, but we can do pretty well. But we know through Michael Nicholson's failings and his haste to sell one striker and his failure to sign another striker, that we're going in. The manager refused to use the word weaker. He said the squad is lighter. So we'll avoid the transfer talk for now, James. Strictly football terms, what are you anticipating on Wednesday night against Bayern Munich?
Well, I'm only sorry that Maeda's not playing, because that is the single worst blow to the team. That, without a shadow of a doubt, that's the single worst blow. I would feel an awful lot better if he was available for the game. And actually, if he was available for the game, I might even fancy us to get something from it. But his loss is enormous. Absolutely enormous. It's just... Yeah, you're right. I mean, there is a, Michael Nicholson element to this, but losing him for two matches and the two matches we lost him for, it's just, it's the worst kind of luck in the world. It's a wee bit of petulance from him, right, in the Young Boys game, but nothing that deserved a two-match ban. That's ludicrous. So, well, he's been really unlucky, and I think we'll really, really, really miss him badly. I am tempted to say I still think we've got a good chance. If everybody shows up and we play our absolute best, we can definitely get a result. You're worried about the 67th minute. I'm worried about the 4th, 5th and 6th minutes, because this is when disaster usually strikes us. I said to my big mate Johnny, we were watching the Villa game in the South Centre, and I just turned and said to him, just don't concede early. And we did, not once but twice. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we've seen it happen in Europe so many times. The one thing you can't afford to do against these teams is lose an early goal. And we just keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. So I'm not so much worried about the latter stages of the game as I'm about the early stages. We will need to withstand an early barrage, and we will need to be strong and disciplined. And if we can do that, and then we can start playing our own football, we've got an outside chance of pulling off a shock. Certainly in the first leg. The away legs, just, I don't even want to think about that. Oh my God. I was in Munich the last time. And we got absolutely played off the park. I mean, it was a privilege to watch some of their players in the flesh, but we got played off the park. And we saw what happened in Dortmund, and so the away leg is the away leg. It will be what it will be. I think we need to take a 5-0 lead into that to feel confident.
On cup shocks, I don't know if you heard today, but Queen's Park won a Scottish Cup tie today. Can Celtic follow that up and beat Bayern Munich on Wednesday?
I believe they can. And I'll tell you why I believe they can. I did a fairly extensive article on this during the week where I felt a lot of people were throwing the towel in on this one a bit too early, you know, especially those in the upper echelons of the club, let's say. And we can talk about that later too. But I think somebody said to me that we're not even in the same stratosphere as Bayern Munich. And my counter argument to that was, well, actually, you know, not so long ago, we played a team who is in the same stratosphere as them, Red Bull Leipzig, off the park and beat them 3-1. That is the team that's sitting three places below them in the Bundesliga right now. So I think we need to face into this game with the kind of mentality that we did against Red Bull Leipzig, but we also need to elevate ourselves to the performances, or the performance level that we did against Red Bull Leipzig. And I feel that if we can elevate ourselves to that level of performance, then we have a chance. And I suppose when you think about it, the atmosphere is going to be off the scale. And if the fans get behind the team from the get-go and they really, you know, really, really raise the noise levels. I know these guys at Bayern Munich, and there's €500 million worth of talent in their team, are used to facing pressure situations. And they've already said in the papers, you know, that they're coming there to enjoy the atmosphere and the usual, you know, they're taking on the tourist attitude to the whole thing, you know, where it's great to come and experience the atmosphere there. But that's only, you know, we're only going there to enjoy it. Well, I think our fan base needs to make it an absolute cauldron of noise that they don't enjoy it, that they're intimidated by it, and that it lifts our players onto the shoulders of giants. You know what I mean? And gets them up to a level. And I think there's one player out there, dependent on how long he can last, who is really, really going to want to prove a point, and that would be Nicholas Kuhn. Because he went through, you know, the youth ranks at Bayern Munich, and he was at that club. And he will, more than anybody else, I would say, on the pitch, want to prove to Bayern Munich what they left go. He did it to Red Bull Leipzig. He proved to them very categorically what they left go. And I think he's going to want to do the same again. So I expect that Nicholas Kuhn will step it up a notch or two in comparison to his previous performances. He will want to, you know, have a similar performance to the kind that he had against Red Bull Leipzig. Now, the other side of it is, if we're looking at the finishing levels that we're seeing on the field of play at the moment, between, I know we're missing Maeda, but we saw Arnie Ingle score a cracker of a goal on Wednesday night against Dundee. We saw Coon himself score a cracker of a goal against Dundee as well. Now, I know it's Dundee, it's not Bayern Munich, obviously. But what I'm saying is, if the chances open up, if the players have a clear shot, if Nicholas Coon cuts inside like he does and he gets a clear shot on goal, he's going to get chances. Yeah. And look, I would say 1-0. Ideally, you know, if we could get a second goal and go 2-0, that'd be absolutely fantastic. We'd have some chance. You know, but for in order for us, like as James said, I'm not even thinking about the second leg. I mean, in order for us to even, you know, not succumb to a hiding in the second leg, we probably need Kasper Schmeichel to have a David Marshall 2004 against Barcelona performance, you know, to you know, the way we took a 1-0 lead out to the Nou Camp and David Marshall was only 19 years of age and he had the performance of a lifetime. We need Kasper Schmeichel to do the same. You know, if we're to have any chance in that kind of game, and it's probably asking a lot of him, you know. But right now, my frame of mind is I want to enjoy the first leg. I believe that if we put in a Red Bull Leipzig level of performance, I think we can get a result. But as James said, definitely we need not to succumb to the early goal. Because that will just no, we did against Leipzig. When you think about it, they got an early goal against us, but we kind of took the game to them directly after. But look, ideally, if we can avoid that, weather the early storm, and then start playing our game, you know, I think we can get a result. I'd be hopeful. I'm not like the naysayers out there going to go and say, well, actually, no, we haven't got a hope. You know, we're just going to get hammered in this. You know, there's no point. That's not the Celtic way. It's not the same. Like, since when was that an acceptable mentality at Celtic? You know, and the fact that some fans are saying, like, we're not going to get anything out of that game. It's a shit attitude. You know, and I can't have that attitude. I've never had that attitude. Going into games where the odds were stacked against us, I've always held out hope that we win. You know, you have to as a Celtic fan. That's the way, you know, because you're used to winning. It's hard to swallow when we don't win, but you still go in with a winning mentality. You know, and the fact that people are saying, oh yeah, well, it's a foregone conclusion. We're not going to beat Bayern Munich and all this kind of carry on. I just don't think that's acceptable. And I think that stems from the attitude of our board, you know, and the fact that they've put a cap on, you know, or put a ceiling on our progression in the Champions League by doing what they did in the transfer window. So, yeah, I think we can get a result. And I'm not thinking about the second leg. I just want to enjoy the first leg. But I think it's going to be our absolutely raucous atmosphere. And if the players can feed off that and they can, you know, they can all step it up a level, I think we can get a result.
Some context here. Match day 7, the Champions League, where we were beating Young Boys, Bayern were losing 3-0 away to Feyenoord. Feyenoord is a team that we always like to think we can benchmark with.
Yeah.
There's no reason why we should be inferior to Feyenoord. So if Feyenoord could have done it a couple of weeks ago, January 22nd, if memory serves, then there's no reason that game should be a write-off. We'll have problems later on with substitutes. You'll have stronger subs. But the game's already this season. Atlanta away, Leipzig at home, etc. And the determination, I mean, the Young Boys game to have 3 goals disallowed, all marginal, all correct, and a missed penalty in the first half, to see it slipping away and then to have the perseverance to win it late on. And in the Champions League table, Atlanta finished above Bayern, as did Aston Villa, as did Dortmund. So, in theory, we've played teams better than Bayern Munich this season. So, we've got them at home on Wednesday. There's a few concerns there, but equally, there's grounds for optimism. The manager will be extremely fired up. Most of the players will. We've got Kuhn that's got a German connection. And there's others, just reminding our new guy from Crystal Palace, Jeffrey Schlupp. It's not the easiest of me. It doesn't roll off the tongue. He was born in Germany, brought up in London, and he's a Ghanaian international, so he'll know a fair bit about them. Over the next couple of days, the players will certainly know plenty about them. And Harry Kane scored 29 penalties in the trot. That's some going. But hopefully he doesn't get the chance, but if he does, he's up against a decent keeper on Wednesday night. So that's sort of covered the football side of things. Something that's prominent amongst all three of us on our blogs, Read Celtic, Video Celts, and the Celtic blog, is Celtic's transfer policy and the failings of Michael Nicholson. So James did a quite extensive piece today about Silent Mick. He does not speak. The only time he's ever been in front of the media was when Brendan Rodgers was appointed as manager, and he's some cracking patter that day. He was asked about going out to Mallorca, how he kept undercover for that episode when him and Chris Mackay went out to Santa Ponsa for the final negotiations after Dermot Desmond had opened the door for him. That's a bit of a theme for Michael Nicholson. He needs other people to do the job for him. But in top rip-roaring fashion, rather than answering the question, Michael Nicholson threw in some line about wearing his sombrero. Ho, ho, ho. Oh, how we laughed. So Michael Nicholson does not speak. Unless there's a new Celtic manager to be appointed, we'll not be hearing from Michael Nicholson until the AGM in November. And at that AGM in November, I'll certainly be there. And the question first question I'll be asking Michael, plenty of advance notice. Either he deliberately decided to weaken the Celtic side ahead of Champions League ties, or he failed to provide the manager with an adequate replacement for Kyogo Furuhashi. So what was it? Did he deliberately weaken the team by getting rid of Kyogo, or is he just not very good at his job? He had months notice to find a striker, and he was unable to do it. So there's plenty of issues there. James was writing about Nichols. An essential part of being a CEO is communications. I would be quite happy to hear him speaking to Celtic TV. He won't even speak to Celtic TV. I don't particularly want him to go in front of the Daily Mail, the Sun, the Record, and those others. I would like to see him give us 15, 20 minutes, all scripted with Jerry McCulloch, just so as we can hear what Michael Nicholson's got to say, tell us his vision for the future. Again, at the Brendan Rodgers unveiling, he was asked about his ambitions for Celtic, and it was to be world-class in everything we do. Well, give us three examples of anything that we're world-class at. The Adidas deal is great, and that's because Celtic supporters are mad for Adidas. Put Adidas and Celtic together, and you've got a money spinner. Strange thing is, we had a Nike deal and two five-year deals with New Balance before we stumbled onto the Adidas. But putting Adidas and other things to one side, what are you expecting from a Celtic CEO, and why are you unhappy with the performances of CEO? Take it away, James.
Well, the modern CEO has to be a communicator. Just has to be. And this guy isn't. What the hell is that?
My daughter. having an argument with her sister.
I thought, have I got something running in the background or something that I should shut?
No. You know, the joys of family life, you know.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Yep.
Yeah, a modern CEO should be a communicator. Right, and this is true in every field, in every business. Even at Ibrox, where they can barely organise their shit into the pot, this guy actually came out and spoke within weeks of taking over. Within a week of taking over, this guy's answering all sorts of questions about the club's plans and all that. And it's not like there's not a lot to talk about at Celtic. You know, you've got a manager entering in the last 18 months of his contract. You've got stadium renovations, which you've been waiting for nearly an eternity. Feels like an eternity. And still aren't done. I mean, we've got a giant tent in the car park right now for the media on Champions League night. That's an embarrassment. That should have been resolved years ago. We've got the Green Brigade banging the drum for their Celtic wall, their redeveloped stand, which they want. We've got some training ground issues that remain, some youth football issues which are glaring, such as why we can't seem to keep any promising youth talent. There's not without a lot of questions that this guy could come and answer, because he's supposed to be the brain, The CEO is supposed to be the brain. The CEO is supposed to run all this and forward plan and all that stuff. And I don't see any evidence that this guy has any of those skills either, because it doesn't seem to be a forward plan. We seem to do an awful lot of making it up on the cuff. Like the transfer window just passed there. And the mayor that comes out from Kyogo's camp, right? And it's clear, by the way, that there's some briefing against Kyogo going on from inside Celtic. And it's clear that they are getting their side of the story across in the media. But the more you hear, the more evident it becomes. And whether you take Celtic's version or whether you take his version, that we had over 2 months noticed that this would happen. And we still didn't do anything about that. We still didn't have a plan B, which is utterly scandalous. I'm sure that Rodgers had a plan B. I'm sure Rodgers knew the kind of players that he wanted. But the guys above him just couldn't get the job done. And possibly part of that is all this, we're the greatest poker players in the room and we don't mind leaving it to the last minute and see who blinks. Well, what if nobody blinks? I mean, chicken seems like a great game, you know, if it comes down to bottle. But what if you can't to just get two people who are fucking stupid? Two people who are just egotistical tits who won't swerve. I mean, is there a potential winner in that game? I don't think so. And I don't understand the way we do things like that. I don't understand why we do things in such a haphazard and frankly dangerous fashion. I mean, honestly, if these people did not realise that selling your star striker before a replacement's been bought, that would jack the prices up, that clubs would make it harder for us to go after their players, then these guys are the stupidest people in the room and not the smartest. And I don't get why that wasn't automatically apparent to them. Anybody could see this. Anybody. At Ibrox, they would not have made this mistake. But I really don't get it. And I mean, anybody who thinks that this was just a narrow, you know, we made effort, but we narrowly failed. It's bollocks, I'm sorry to say. 2 months lead time, you should not be narrowly failing anyway. You should be able to get the job done, right? But what I thought was especially interesting, and I mentioned it in my article, is that we have our title-winning women's manager actually in the papers today, saying the club hasn't done enough for her because her resources are less than that of Glasgow City and the club at Ibrox, which is skint. So I don't understand how we do things. I don't understand why we do them this way. There's tens of millions of pounds sitting in the bank and it's not doing anything. To not use it is to not have it. And we might as well not have it, because we ended up on the last day of the transfer window doing exactly what the club from Ibrox was doing, scrambling about, trying to get somebody on loan. It's pitiful. That's not the way a big club behaves. And part of the problem is that a lot of us pointed the finger at Lowell for a long, long time. So when's this guy going to get some proper scrutiny? This is the guy in the seat. This is the guy in the big job. And let me tell you, it looks like a job way too big for him. Way too big. Because he doesn't seem to grasp any of the fundamentals of doing it. And media relations is one of those fundamentals. And Joe, you're right. It would be nice to see him sit in front of Celtic TV to give an interview. But I don't think that's enough. I think he has to be put in front of all those bloodthirsty bastards in the Scottish press who would be trying to find controversial, difficult questions to ask him. Because this guy needs to sit and answer some difficult questions. The only difficult question that I've seen this guy get in the last X number of months, even years, was the one you tried to ask at the AGM, which Daddy Law wouldn't let him answer. And
that's pathetic. On a similar vein, a properly functioning company would have a board of directors that would speak to the CEO and find out what went on during that shambles of a January transfer window. He did quite a lot of good things, but it was badly undermined by the major decision. But we all know the answer. Michael Nicholson says, look at the cheque for Kyogo, look at the cheque for Bernabei, and look at what we paid for Jota. There's another profit for you, lads. You're not such a bad lad after all, Michael. Congratulations.
That would be something. If he even came out and said as much as that, that would be something. Instead, we get stony silence. And there's a certain arrogance there as well, don't you think? When the Ibrox CEO, who's only newly appointed, sits in front of the media and explains not just what his strategy is, but why the manager's not going to get any signings in the January window, that's a guy assuming a leadership position and acting like a leader. We might laugh our asses off at the idea that this guy's ever going to be able to implement any fundamental, long-lasting change at that club. That's a dead end that will never happen. But he has at least put himself out there to be ridiculed by the Daily Record and made a fool of in the Sun and called out for no, giving us some good news. Oh, we never heard a single thing today that was positive. Well, at least he's came out and spoke to you. The media should be, the media itself should be banging on this guy's door and saying, there's a lot of issues here. When are you going to talk to us about some of them? When are you going to answer some questions? I think there's a certain arrogance involved in it, and I think it's cowardly as well to an extent. He's hiding, the guy's in hiding. Can't subject yourself to one media interview. That's somebody in hiding, or whoever's dangling him on the strings has told him, no, you're not doing that. Which means that we don't have a CEO at all. We've got a puppet. We've got a placeman. And that also is pathetic and dangerous.
Anyone looking at the structure, looking at who appointed who, knows exactly who's calling the shots at Celtic. It might not have the CEO title, but I don't think anything significant gets done at Celtic without getting run past the mentor for Michael Nicholson. So I would suggest it's a mixture between arrogance and contempt. The customers, they can come along and do all their Celtic cha-cha-cha and great Champions League nights and all that, but there's no interest whatsoever in keeping them in the loop other than retaining their bank details. I mean, you never mentioned there that the season ticket exchange scheme, that really should be something that's high up for a club that always goes on about
a mile long of stuff this guy could be coming on talking to.
How fantastic the fans are, how much they love them, how much they need them, blah, blah, blah. Well, what was the actual crowd at the game against Dundee the other night? I'm sure, even despite the circumstances, even it being available on pay-per-view and Celtic TV, you could have got 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. If they'd been offered a ticket, they could have went along. And it would also give you a chance to find out how real the waiting list is for tickets. But we've kept you in the dark for now, Eric. Give us your thoughts on the performance or the non-performance of Michael Nicholson, and what would you like to see from a Celtic CEO?
Can I come in for 1 second first?
Right.
There is one forum where he has occasionally appeared in front of people and answered questions, and that's what I call the Tea and Biscuits fan forum thing, which you have to apply to attend. You have to apply. You have to go on the website and actually fill in an application to attend it. So for a laugh, I did it last year. And then again, at the start of January. And that's what I did it for, as a laugh. Because I don't have any belief that I will ever be invited to that. I don't believe I will ever see the inside of that room. That room could be on the moon for all I'll ever be anywhere near it. They don't want people like us in that room. And that's no harm to anybody who's in that room. I know that some of the people in that room have asked hard questions. I've seen the transcripts of some of the meetings. And I know that there's a lot of hard questions get asked. But what I also see is some of the answers that he gives, which are all about, oh, this can't be discussed because of, oh, that one there, yeah, we'll take that under advisement and we'll get back to you on that one. And it's all moving it on to some other time and pushing it a bit further down the road. We'll discuss it then. Oh, that's not for me to discuss tonight. We can't do that. It's pathetic. The guy needs to put himself up to some proper investigation and some proper questioning. It's ridiculous. He's been in there. How long has he been in the job now? 2.5 years? Something like that?
Three and a half.
3.5 years, right. I mean, the guy's not gave one single media interview. CEO of a major organisation who's not gave a single media interview in that time. That must be unheard of. That must be unique to your club. I don't believe that would fly in any field, in any form of business. Don't believe it. So I want to know why the media isn't banging this guy's door down and demanding this, because they should be.
The fan forum, a
lot of questions to ask.
The fan forum's a box-ticking exercise. The Celtic is keen in that as they are on a supporters liaison officer and a youth academy. It's things they've got to do, but like everything else, they do the absolute minimum. So, Eric, give us your thoughts on dynamic Michael Nicholson.
Right, well,
action man.
Action man. Yeah, I I think a few days ago there, I jokingly sent in, James said it was a bit of a slow news day and he was looking for something to write. So I sent him a, you know, something to write, the career of CEO Michael Nicholson. And then I sent him a picture of a tumbleweed blowing by.
Yeah.
And that pretty much sums it up, because it's just radio silence. There's nothing coming out of the CEO's office in terms of, you know, he just doesn't do anything. He's there and that's it. And I'd extend an invite to Michael Nicholson to come on to our show. He can come on to our podcast and we'll fire some questions at him and we'll see how he gets on, you know, but he's not going to. He's not going to come on to any media, fan media, anything. Nobody's.
It's been issued.
Yeah, but
the
point I would make is that we are very much a reactive club. We're not a proactive club. And I think that it was pretty much summed up by the news that came out that there was, you know, we had the 2 months, as James said, we had the 2 months notice. We're lastminute.com. We only react to situations and we react to them too late. And I wrote an article during the week last week where I said the same thing, you know, that this kind of behavior is either done by design or it's either done by sheer stupidity. Now, these guys are not stupid guys. Peter Law is not a stupid guy. Michael Nicholson is not a stupid guy. So, therefore, that leaves the question remaining. Why did they do this? Why did they behave like this? You know, why in a transfer window on the last day of the window do they grandstand with clubs like Slaven Bratislava for David Strelic and Brøndby for Tyus Fiskegaard? And why do they piss ball about with pathetic bids that the clubs are not going to accept? And I mean, again, we're just bloggers. We're just guys who write about the club day to day. But even, you know, the man in the street and his dog can see that every club that you approach on deadline day is going to try and fleece you because of the simple fact that they know you're desperate. And not only do they know Celtic are desperate, they know that Celtic are a cash-rich club. So they're going to shoot for the stars in terms of what they're going to ask for players. And how do these guys not see that? We see it. How do they not see it? So my belief is that this is done by design, right? Because one of the things that I have noticed throughout the week this week with the comments both on the Read Celtic Facebook and on my blogs, right? Everybody, I think the board feeds off the fact that there is a good chunk of the fan base out there who are happy to just accept the status quo. And an awful lot of that is reflected in the comments that I'm getting. Oh, look, we've scored 14 goals since Kyogo left. Maeda can do the job. It's all, you know, everything is just, Kyogo's now but a long distant memory, you know, and we're flying it. We're flying in all cylinders. We're absolutely, you know, we're doing a brilliant job at the moment. We're banging in the goals. And this is the thing, because these guys don't communicate with the fans, they just, when something bad happens, like what happened in the transfer window and us not replacing Kyogo, they just write it out because they don't speak and they don't appear in front of the fans and they don't answer any questions. And eventually they just feed off the aftermath. And the aftermath is what we've seen in the last few games. We've seen comprehensive scorelines. We've seen Maeda absolutely stepping it up. And James alluded to that in our last podcast, that these guys do not get the credit for that. They're all, you know, they're probably acting now, backslapping each other, saying they're vindicated. Look, this risk worked. And it's risk versus reward. That's fine. We're getting the reward now. We're getting the goals. But as you have also pointed out, Joe, on Wednesday night, when it comes to the 60th minute or the 67th minute in that game against Bayern Munich, we're going to have Johnny Kenny and Yang playing up front. And that's true necessity. We have no choice but to play those players up front, because Adam Ida is going to be out on his feet. The chances are that, you know, Jota, he'll do 60, 70 minutes max, you know, and he's going to be out on his feet. So these guys have to come on. And that could be at a point where we're 1-0, 2-0 up. And that puts our results seriously at risk because we don't have the quality of player on the pitch that we need to see it out. You know, so I don't understand the way the board thinks. I can't wrap my head around it, because in business myself, in the job that I work in, I'm a proactive person. I'm always trying to get out ahead of problems. That's just the way I think. So therefore, I can't understand people who are lastminute.com. You know what I mean? And our board is 100% lastminute.com in everything they do. And I have copped an unmerciful amount of flack this week from my blogs, what I've written about it, the things that I've said. And it just baffles me, like, that there are people out there who think that this, so, like, that the board are brilliant and that this behavior is fantastic. And look at what they've done. They've look at the trophies they've won. Look at where they've taken us. We're the best run club in Britain. Maybe from a financial perspective and from an accountant's perspective, we're the best run club in Britain. But as James said earlier on, they're like, we have tens of millions sitting in the bank doing absolutely jack shit. Nothing. It's doing nothing, except, as you even said in the last podcast, paying corporation tax. We're paying tax with that money.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the end game here? And that's why we want people, you know, or people want Michael Nicholson to sit in front of, you know, somebody and say, this is our end game. This is why we're stockpiling this money. There's a reason for it. But nobody will give us a reason. So therefore, fans are left to scratch. Fans like me, anyway, who actually, you know, believe the club can do better, are left scratching their heads wondering what the hell this money is being stockpiled for. Is it for the stand? If so, tell us. Let us know. You know, and like I said today, I did an article on Hugh Keevans, and like, it was admirable, to be fair, what he was trying to do. You know, in a funny way, his mathematics was brutal. You know, saying that we get 11 million quid in gate money in a Champions League game when it works out at nearly 3 million quid, really. So I don't know where he was getting the other almost 8 million quid from. But, you know, but the fact of the matter was, I couldn't argue with a thing that Hugh Keevans said in that article today. But like I also said, he doesn't get to be a spokesperson on our behalf, because in 2 weeks' time, he'll be slating the fan base and slating Celtic again. So he just doesn't get to be a spokesperson. But the point he made was that it is the Celtic fans who are coughing up 46 quid for the Champions League game on Wednesday night. It is them who is putting the money in the coffers. And the least that they deserve is the respect to be told what the strategy is, what the plan is, and why the hell we have hundreds of millions sitting in the bank. Because the way we're accumulating cash at the moment, we'll have over 200 million sitting there soon enough, if the way things keep going the way they are. We're going to have record figures in our next set of accounts. We're going to have record turnover and probably a record bank balance. So what's the guy doing? I don't know. Nobody knows what he's doing. You know, and the fact of the matter is, like, people can call for him to come out and sit in front of the media. If he hasn't done it in nearly 4 years, he's not going to do it now. So we're all going to be left wanting in this department. And, like, we need to keep, as James said in his blog today, we need to keep the pressure on. Because eventually something's got to give, you know?
Right. Well, we're going to finish up by linking two issues together.
We're not asking for much here, right? We're not asking for regime change here. We're only asking for someone to come out and articulate a plan. As you said, this could all be resolved by, tell us what you're keeping the money for. If there is some use earmarked for that money, come and tell us what it is. Explain to us what the thinking behind all this is. And that's surely not too much to ask. You know, if there is a plan, I think it will unless it's, we're going to buy Rangers, we're going to buy their entire club, and we're either going to shut it down completely, or we're going to, like, sink a few million in and try and boost, you know, create a domestic rival. Unless it's something like that, I think it'll be something that we'll be broadly in favour of. If somebody turns around and says, we've earmarked £60 million for redeveloping the stadium, for example, I don't think any of us would blink at that. It would be like, yeah, fine. Brilliant. We know what it's talking about. Yeah. We get it. And that's sinking the money into infrastructure spending, and that will have a long-term benefit and whatnot. We're not stupid people. We're not asking for every penny to be spent on transfers. We just want to know what the plan is. That there is a plan. That it's not just accumulate vast cash reserves and do nothing with them. I wrote a piece last year, right? It makes you try and puzzle out intent, right? It makes you sit down and try and work out what these people are thinking. So you're in, you spin all sorts of mad ideas to yourself. Like, I mean, maybe it's just as simple as what some people have been telling me for years, that this is Old Firm Incorporated, and we don't want to spend any sum of money which would take us too far in front of them, that we would completely leave them behind, and there would be no chance of them ever catching us. And maybe it's something completely radical and saying, maybe and I was going to write about this, and I'll probably do this week. I saw that David Lowe gave an interview to one of the podcasts the other day and talked about the discussions that Celtic had about buying an English club at one point. Maybe it's something radical and game-changing like that. Maybe they're accumulating all this money to try and buy their way into the English system, the English league system, by setting up a Celtic Mark II down there somewhere. Maybe it is. But it would be nice to know that. It would be nice to have to be able to offer an opinion on that and a point of view on that and say whether we like the idea or not, or whether we agree with the idea or not, and look at the pitfalls and the potential in it. But just to get us none. Nothing. It encourages people to speculate. So I like to speculate, right? So last year, I had to think about it and I thought, well, is there any group of people out there who these people, the way they act and the things they do, is there any group of people out there that do this and behave like this? And it will sound ridiculous, right? But they remind me a lot of hardcore gamers, right? And I've tossed this idea over in my head so many times. They remind me a lot of hardcore gamers. Like, I'm a strategy sims guy, right? So I like to play like the Total War games and stuff like that. There's a guy on YouTube called Legend of Total War, and he is obsessed with breaking the game, right? And he does this with every single release. He finds all the flaws in the code, all the flaws in the AI behavior, and he does game breaking things and then posts it on YouTube. Like, he's found exploits in the you know, if you win a battle, certain characters, if you win a battle, you get another move. And so he's like conquered the entire map in the first move of the game, right? Just by exploiting all these things. And he does this and he posts all these crazy things on YouTube. There are other gamers who, when they beat the game, they will jack up the difficulty. And if jacking up the difficulty doesn't make it impossible for them, they will find other ways. They will limit their use of certain units. They will limit their use of certain strategies. And then to give themselves an extra level of test and an extra challenge, right? And I sometimes think that that's what we're doing. I sometimes think that we are, it's not sabotage for the sake of any other club. It's just sabotage to see what we can get away with. If we sell the top striker, can we still win the league? If we lose the manager and bring in Neil Lennon, can we still win the treble? They're the only other people who act like this that I can think of. And it's all about how far can we push this before it breaks? Is there a limit that we can reach? Is there a level we can hit before fans start turning against us, or fans stop turning up? Or, you know, if we win the league by 12 points this season and we sell a couple of players, can we win the league by 12 points next season? Or do we have to, like, lower our expectations a wee bit and maybe only win it by 9 points? It's always a test to try and do more with less, or to see what the breaking point is, the limit you can go before the cuts start having exponential effects. And I can't really think of very many other things it can be. These guys are just inveterate risk takers. They're like gamblers who are always trying to chase that extra high. Or they're gamers. They just like to see how much they can stress the system before it breaks. Maybe that's what they think.
They've given us the answer. They're saving up for a rainy day. That's it. They'll just keep it and keep it and keep it. And we're not always going to qualify for the Champions League. We might be playing Thursday soon.
That's risk averse. That's preparing to fail. Preparing for failure.
Yeah. I'm not justifying it. I'm just telling you.
That's not a viable strategy either.
If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. We're
going to finish up. So we're going to link two things together. So the geniuses, the wizards in the Celtic boardroom, they managed to keep ahead domestically of a team that couldn't beat Queen's Park at home today. So congratulations. The league is looking very, very strong. There's a better than 50-50 chance of a treble. It's a fantastic achievement by Brendan Rodgers. And who knows what's going on behind the scenes, what he's going through. So we are in a very good position domestically. I will eat humble pie when we've had three successive seasons in the Champions League, reaching the stage we're at this season. I'll have got it all wrong if the club have managed to do that. I'd love to be proved wrong. I suspect I won't, because they're preparing for rainy days and preparing to fail. So we're going to finish up. Keep it brief, James. What's your expectations for this mixed week, where we've got the joys of Bayern Munich and they've got how on earth they try and get rid of this hopeless manager, a guy that we were told a year ago he was in the cusp of a quadruple treble. He was a proper football manager. He was putting Brendan Rodgers in his place. So what's your expectation? Keep it brief, a couple of minutes. What's your expectations for Bayern Munich and Clermont? Over to you.
I will add a little tiny bit to what you said there, right? That whole strategy of preparing to fail, right? That was viable, right? When the price, when the reward for success wasn't as high as it is just now, right? If we get to the Champions League next season, the money on offer will be even bigger than it was this season. This was a record-breaking revenue year because of it, right? So the price for getting there has made the risk completely unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. Because it just makes no financial or business sense at all to take a risk with that kind of money. It's so stupid. But in terms of the week ahead, yeah, Bayern Munich, I suspect it will be a tight game. It will be a close game. And I think we will go to Munich still in the tie. There you go. We'll keep it tight and it'll be close enough that we'll go to Munich still in the tie. In terms of whether Philip Clermont survives the week, I personally don't see how he can survive to close a business this evening, but I've seen stranger things happen over there. This is an unsurvivable result. Let's not kid ourselves. This is an unsurvivable result. This, we all talked this season about the moment a crisis will come when they'll have no other option. Well, this is it. There's not going to be a worse moment than this. This is it. So if he survives this, I really genuinely don't know what they're waiting for. I think it will be an enormous show of weakness on the club's part if they don't sack him. Enormous show of weakness. Because they really have to. There's really no way to survive this.
Right. Over to Eric. I suspect at some point this week the anger of fan media will get to such a level that Patrick Stewart will realise that they're starting to shout at him,
yeah,
and he'll need to do his duty and get somebody staunch, and hopefully it's Alec Ray, Barry Ferguson, John Brown, any combination of those three, or better still, a dream team, the Ray, Brown, Ferguson combination are in the dugout at Tynecastle next week. So, Eric, round things up for us today.
I said earlier that Gerrard wouldn't come back. Do you think he would, and do you think they would approach him?
No, that's out of bounds. Eric, finish things up for us tonight. We've had a good day. You round it off in style.
Yeah, we've had an extended show, but I think that was the result of the result at Ibrox today. So, but yeah, my prediction for the game against Bayern Munich is I think we can take a 1-0 win out of it. We might have, like you said, that Tony Watt moment where we go 2-0 up. That'd be brilliant if we could get that'd be a bonus. If Daniel Cummings or somebody like that could do that for us, it'd be amazing. In terms of Phil Clermont, they won't sack him. They can't afford to. It's that simple. They can't afford to. They'll want to, and our colleague, Mark Dingwall, I'm sure will have, when we sit down in our call on Tuesday, I'm sure his numbers will be through the roof after this week anyway on Follow. So, but I don't see them. I just don't think they can afford to sack him. And they will, he'll get the dreaded vote of, the dreaded back, you know, the vote of confidence from the board. And it'll be a case of we're sticking with him because we want to see how far he can take us in the Europa League. And my guess is that he won't go. But we'll see. So I'm saying 1-0 against Bayern Munich, and I'm saying Phil Clermont will hang in there with the skin of his teeth.
Right. That's almost 90 minutes. Oh, James is ready. One final pass, James. You're limited to 30 seconds.
Talking about the fury of the forums, right? Well, this is what I just got sent. Four Lads Had a Dream just tweeted this. Asked the manager if he would offer his resignation. He has refused. Followed it up twice by saying the majority of fans no longer want him and he doesn't have any credit in the bank to survive this. Point blank, refuses to go. make excuses. No one has been saying this the last few weeks.
Right. That's almost the final call. I think we're almost at 90 minutes. There won't be any stoppage time, no half time, no penalty time. So if you've enjoyed the content today, and if you've lasted this long, I suspect you have, please click on subscribe, leave a comment, preferably something positive, and like.
Any more trolls will be eliminated.
Yep. But, so put a comment. We're just over 600 subscribers. That's quite decent going. Let's push towards 700. And the big target's 1,000 as soon as possible. But one step at a time. I think it was 615 at lunchtime today. If you've enjoyed our comments, our contributions, our laughter, etc., etc., we'll be back again next week. I can't promise it'll be as exciting and as fun-filled and as energetic as today. We might be back to Reverend I Am Jolly, but I suspect not. The laughter will be rolling on for a few days, weeks, months yet. If this is the last time he's there, manager, thank you very much, Phil Clement. You've been cracking fun. You were as boring as dishwater for a couple of months, but the minute you lost at home to Motherwell at March last year, you went absolutely bonkers. It was brilliant. The moral victory against Celtic, all the conspiracies, feeding off the paranoid, etc. It's been a whiz. We've really enjoyed it. Hopefully you get a full payoff, and you'll always be up there with Mickey Beale, Pedro Caixinha,
yes,
and
you will.
Joe Van Bronckhorst. Van Bronckhorst lost 3-0 and 4-0 at Celtic Park. Hopefully you're back at Celtic Park in March, but I suspect you'll be back in Belgium by then. So that's all for us. We'll be back again.
And not as a Belgian week. National coach, one suspects.
Nope.
Yeah. Thanks for the memories, Phil.
All the best, Phil. We'll leave it for now. We'll catch you again some other time. Cheers.
See you later, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks.